Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Emigrants by Willem Mulberry, translated by Gustav Lannestock. Introduction by Roger McKnight, narrated by Anne-Marie Arvdal Richardson. Introduction to the Emigrant Novels. Willem Mulberry, The Early Years. Hot-tempered, easily moved, and changeable, was how the Swedish novelist Willem Mulberry once described himself. He might have added that in the first half of the 20th century he was both the most widely admired and the most deeply distrusted of all Swedish authors. A man of humble origins but immense ambition and strong opinions, Mulberry spent his entire literary life championing the rights of the common people. This tendency, combined with his volatile temperament, earned Mulberry a deep, abiding respect from the general reading public, while it created barriers for him among conservative critics, politicians, and religious leaders. Mulberry's biography has many elements of a rags-to-riches tale. He was born on August 28, 1898, in a small family cabin in southern Småland, historically one of the most impoverished areas of Sweden. The region had long been known as Darkest Småland because of the people's conservative Lutheranism and reluctance to accept other religious views. During Mulberry's childhood years, only one railroad station existed in the vicinity of his family home, and the horse was still the most common mode of transportation. Clothes were made locally, and often paid for, by barter. Mulberry's father was a career soldier who farmed a small plot of forest land. His mother, who lived into her 90s, cared for the family. Although Mulberry in his later non-fictional works remembered this rustic setting as the spot where I ran barefoot, his boyhood was one of hardship. He received just 5 years of formal schooling, and was the only boy in his family who survived to adulthood. Even in his 50s, Mulberry recalled the frustration of trying to satisfy his hunger for learning in an environment where the teaching was poor and books scarce. In his teens and early 20s, Mulberry worked as a manual laborer, chiefly among the lumberjacks and farmhands of Småland, and with great reluctance did his compulsory military service. His first-hand experiences from these years were later to serve as important motifs in his writings. Mulberry left his parents' home in 1916 to attend adult continuing education school, Folkhögskola, in Grimslöv. A nearly fatal bout of influenza brought his final attempt at formal schooling to an abrupt halt. The enduring pattern of the aspiring writer's life emerged in the decade of the 1920s. He worked as a journalist for small-town newspapers in southern Sweden, met his future wife, and got his start as a novelist. This period began what his biographer Magnus von Platen has called the gigantic day of work at the writing desk, which his life came to be. Mulberry was nothing if not indefatigable. In addition to the daily routine of writing news stories, setting type, and selling advertising space, he wrote several novels before having one accepted for publication. His literary breakthrough came in 1927 with Raskens in Soldatfamiljshistoria, Raskens, the story of a soldier's family. This novel, set in rural Småland, established Mulberry as a writer for and of the common people, and solidified his place among the ranks of the renowned Swedish working-class novelists, proletärförfattare, of the 1920s and 1930s. These authors, including Jan Fridegård, Ivar Lo-Johansson, and Moa Martinsson, were the first in Swedish literature to describe the lives of the lower classes from the perspective of men and women who, themselves, had grown up among the working poor. Mulberry's depictions of the customs and ways of life in Småland constituted his major contribution to this group of writers. The local realism in his early fiction was the foundation on which his popularity in Sweden was built. It was not until the publication of his four great novels about Swedish emigration to Minnesota that his fame spread to other countries in Europe and across the Atlantic. In 1929, Moberg moved north to Stockholm with his wife and family. Despite his restless spirit, he kept a permanent residence near that city until his death on August 8, 1973. Moberg and emigration. Since his childhood, America had been an ever-present reality for Moberg. Historically, this is not surprising. Of the 1.2 million emigrants who left Sweden for America between 1845 and 1930, more than 300,000 came from Småland. Moberg recalled the impact the waves of immigration had on him. In his collection of autobiographical essays, Berättelser ur min levnad, Tales of My Life, he wrote that his mother and father came from families so poor that all their brothers and sisters emigrated to the United States, leaving only his parents to perpetuate their respective family lines in Sweden. He claimed more relatives in America than in Sweden itself. In his boyhood fancy, Moberg envisioned the word America as meaning mer rika, more rich. The steady supply of America letters, the money orders in dollars, and the Swedish-American newspapers Moberg described as invading his boyhood home so sparked his imagination that at the age of 18 he planned to emigrate himself, only to be stopped at the last moment, as he reported it, by his mother's and grandmother's laments that seeing a son off to America from the railway station was the same as attending the boy's funeral. Perhaps as a substitute for his blighted hopes, Moberg dreamed as early as the 1920s of erecting a literary monument to those of his family members who settled in the New World. This dream was not to be realized until the late 1940s. During the 1930s, Moberg, long a staunch supporter of socialist reforms, attacked the ruling Social Democratic Party for its perpetuation of the bureaucracy and for its support of the Swedish State Church. Later, when World War II broke out, he criticized the government in Stockholm for its failure to take a firm stand against Nazism. His best-selling novel, Rid i natt, Ride This Night, although set in the 17th century, was read by many as a comment on the tyranny of the Nazi era. Moberg's outspoken tendencies concerning national issues produced a twofold personal effect. First, they guaranteed his disfavor among many influential public figures. Indeed, Moberg remained embroiled in cultural debates on sensitive issues throughout the 1940s and early 1950s. He protested cases of blackmail and cover-ups in the Swedish police force and legal system, and argued against the continued existence of the Swedish monarchy. Second, his political involvement, in combination with limitations on travel during World War II, delayed until 1947 the time when he could begin writing on Swedish emigration. By then, Moberg was almost 50. He was celebrated in Sweden, yet disillusioned with the country's leadership. Seen through the lens of his personal dissatisfaction and from the perspective of a war-torn Europe, the United States appeared to Moberg in the late 1940s as the world's last bastion of freedom and democracy. He seems to have felt a genuine desire to record the contribution made by Swedish emigrants to the country he thought was the world's only remaining hope. Looking back on this time in 1968, Moberg wrote, "I know that I have a genuine streak of stubbornness, a quality to be taken for better or worse, and I had made up my mind that I was going to cross the Atlantic Ocean in order to search out my unknown relations, for I could not get their destiny out of my mind. The older I became, the more it interested me." In 1945, Moberg began background study for what became the Emigrant Tetralogy, and appears to have started actual work on the novels 2 years later. The first volume, Utvandrarna, The Emigrants, appeared in 1949, followed in 1952 by Invandrarna, Unto a Good Land. The final volumes, Nybyggarna, The Settlers, and Sista Brevet till Sverige, The Last Letter Home, were published in 1956 and 1959. The author often referred to these books as a single work, the emigrant novels, Utvandrarromanen, and insisted that they be read as a documentary novel. To ensure the verisimilitude of his story, Mulberry did extensive historical research in both Sweden and the United States. He studied county records in Småland and read many collections of letters that immigrants in America had sent to relatives in Sweden during the 19th century. His studies also included trips to the Maritime Museum in Gothenburg. This research gave him a record of living conditions in 19th century Sweden and a feel for life aboard sailing vessels in the days when emigration had not yet become an industry backed by large steamship companies. Some readers have felt that The Emigrants is the most successful of the four volumes, largely because Moberg was writing about his home turf, the Smålandish countryside. No one can doubt that his novel gives an accurate and inspired account of the way the author's predecessors lived and saw the world. From a Minnesota point of view, the reader is reminded that this first volume carefully traces the customs of the Smålanders, who were the most numerous of the Swedish immigrants to this state, and whose descendants still make up the largest number of Minnesota's ethnic Swedes. In order to build a historical framework in which his characters Carl Oscar and Christina could move in the New World, and especially in frontier Minnesota, Mulberry embarked in 1948 on a study trip through the United States. An inexperienced traveler with little knowledge of English, he nevertheless gathered an impressive array of documentation that placed his immigrants in the mainstream of frontier experience. Mulberry carried out his studies in the archives of the Swedish American Museum in Philadelphia, among the Swedes of Minnesota, and through back issues of Swedish American newspapers. His first-hand contacts with Swedish Americans in Chisago and Washington counties afforded him invaluable information on the lives of those people's immigrant forebearers. Unto a Good Land places the immigrants on American soil. The Settlers and The Last Letter Home offer an accurate overview of pioneer life in Minnesota. These novels give details of a riverboat trip up the Mississippi River, the challenges of staking out a claim in the wilderness, the devastation of grasshopper plagues, the fear of Indians, the pace of life during the Civil War, and the difficulties faced by European immigrants in adjusting to the culture of the New World. Mulberry left nothing to chance in documenting the daily life and historical events of Minnesota from 1850, when Carl Oscar and Christina arrive in Minnesota, until 1890, when Carl Oscar dies. The novelist's friends in Minnesota told of receiving letters from him inquiring about the nature of thunderstorms in the state, the cost of postage stamps in the 19th century, the number of daylight hours in summer, as well as distances between different parts of the state. Mulberry even insisted that friends show him firsthand what animals strange to a Swede, such as crickets and skunks, looked like. Indeed, so insistent was Mulberry that his fictional tale also be used as instructional history that he appended a bibliography of his sources to the Swedish edition of the emigrant novels. In this Borealis Books edition, that bibliography is published for the first time in English. On only one major historical point did Mulberry allow the exigencies of plot construction to interfere with the dictates of historical accuracy. There are no known cases of a group of Swedish settlers journeying directly to and settling permanently in Minnesota prior to 1860. At mid-century, the pattern of Swedish migration in the Midwest invariably included an initial stay of several years in Illinois or Iowa. Only after the immigrants had gotten their feet on the ground among fellow countrymen in those states did they venture up the Mississippi to more remote Minnesota. In taking Carl Oscar and his group straight from the East Coast to Minnesota, Moberg emphasized the true hardy pioneer nature of his character's journey. Writing the Emigrant Novels. Like the fictional Carl Oscar, Moberg himself wanted to be the first on the scene. He saw himself as a literary discoverer and pioneer, a fact that presents some intriguing questions to American readers. Knowing something of Moberg's personal relationship with America can serve as a helpful guide in understanding some of the themes he developed in the emigrant novels. "We're off to a good start," Moberg told reporters in Stockholm as he departed on his first trip to the United States in June 1948. On that occasion, he entertained friends and journalists by playing the harmonica. For better or for worse, he was unable always to maintain such high spirits during the years after his arrival in America. Indeed, his own meeting with America was one of joy mixed with bitter disappointment. Moberg's period of legal residence in the United States lasted from 1948 to 1955. During that time, he held two different immigrant visas and spoke repeatedly of settling permanently. As he told one Swedish reporter, "That which I find most attractive in America is the sense of freedom. It appears to me as if the authorities here have more respect for the individual than at home, and I like that." Gustav Lannestock, Moberg's translator, wrote of the novelist's high hopes of gaining wealth and fame in the United States. Lannestock argued that Moberg, in the late 1940s, envisioned a promising future for himself as a writer and an adopted son of America, until his aspirations were suddenly disappointed in the mid-1950s by a series of personal reverses, chiefly in disagreements with his American publishers, who Moberg felt had unjustifiably censored the emigrant novels. It now seems clear, however, that Moberg, to his own surprise, began experiencing mixed emotions about the New World as early as 1948. On one hand, he admired the material success of Americans and appreciated the generosity of ordinary citizens. Especially appealing to him was the sense of independence and self-reliance exhibited by American workers. In America, he found none of the obsequiousness toward the moneyed classes so common in Sweden. Here, a man was judged for what he can do. On the other hand, some aspects of American life proved to be less agreeable. The oppressive summer heat, the perceived absence of a vital literary life among the common people, and the conservative religious politics of Middle America were among Moberg's earliest complaints. By the beginning of the 1950s, his dissatisfaction extended to the political sphere. He was angered by the disruption caused by Senator Joseph McCarthy's hunt for communists and responded with disgust when Charlie Chaplin was expelled from the country for his leftist sympathies. In an exasperating personal confrontation in 1955, the Internal Revenue Service in New York required Moberg to deposit $9,000 as a lien against possible back taxes before he could return to Sweden for a visit. Moberg's general views on the United States were crystallized in his attitudes toward two states, Minnesota and California. He returned to Minnesota several times after his initial 1948 visit. He found the people hardworking. Swedish farmers in Minnesota had opened up more land for cultivation in 100 years than farmers in Sweden had managed since the Viking Age, Moberg stated with pride. The Swedish settlement areas and the Småland-like countryside around Lindstrom and central Chisago County appealed to him. Visits to Swedish cemeteries in Minnesota inspired some of his most poetic non-fictional accounts of America as he imagined the lives and deaths of his beloved Swedish farmers in fields far from home. Everyday life in Minnesota proved to be more prosaic, however. Moberg lamented the drabness of the state's small towns, and the November chill brought uncomfortable reminders of Sweden. Still, it was the intolerance and bigotry he found in the Lutheran churches of the upper Midwest that provoked him most. In the long run, the climate of Minnesota, both meteorological and spiritual, proved to be too rigorous. The North Star State bore the unmistakable stamp, he wrote, of Calvin, Zwingli, and Northern European Puritanism. If Moberg had a love affair with America, it was with California. Beginning in the autumn of 1948, he lived in Carmel, where one of his American aunts rented a house to him. In the sunshine there and in close proximity to John Steinbeck's Cannery Row, Moberg basked in what he called the joyous spirit of Petrarch and Boccaccio. Here he completed The Emigrants and began Unto a Good Land. And it was here that he met Gustav Lannestock, who became his translator. Lannestock was a native Swede who resided in Carmel, where he worked in real estate and collected rare books. They met by chance while walking on a California beach in the late 1940s. Moberg persuaded Lannestock to undertake the translation of the novels. Lannestock stayed with the translation project through the entire tetralogy. The friendship formed through this project lasted until Moberg's death. Moberg was not to stay put, however. A case of wanderlust, which was to last 17 years, had taken control of him, as he explained years later. He moved to Florida in 1953, then back to the Monterey-Carmel area, eventually to Laguna Beach in California, and even spent some time in Mexico, with short stops in New York interspersed. In 1955, he returned to Europe, bothered by the political and literary winds blowing in America, and admitting his failure at adjusting to American culture. He completed the Emigrant Tetralogy in Europe. Themes in the Emigrant Novels. Moberg had a strongly populist view of history and rejected the mythologizing great man approach so popular among Swedish historians and novelists before his time. He argued that older writers had praised the deeds of Swedish monarchs and statesmen in an effort to keep the commoners as loyal, unquestioning subjects of the ruling classes. This approach he described as historical casuistry and blamed it for creating feelings of ultra-royalism, ultra-patriotism, and ultra-heroism. In the process of emigration, Moberg saw a historical movement set in motion and sustained by daring commoners who acted without a significant portal figure as their leader. Emigration changed history, according to this argument, in that it deprived Sweden of a cheap labor supply and aided America in the building of a new society. On a material plane, America is the land where people of modest means but the right abilities can thrive. Karl Oskar is undistinguished as a leader of men. He is only one emigrant among many emigrants, according to one critic. Yet he is successful as a farmer in America because he possesses the proper practical skills. Karl Oskar is thwarted in Sweden, but sees his hard work rewarded with ever-increasing affluence in Minnesota. So interested was Moberg in this pioneering theme that he came to present his own actions in a similar, though more individualized, light. He wished to be viewed as the first in Sweden to practice the art of writing the documentary novel. Likewise, Moberg argued for his importance as the discoverer of the topic of Swedish emigration. Swedish scholars and writers before him had neglected the subject, he felt, because the movement revealed the Swedish government's lack of foresight in failing to prevent it. Just as Karl Oskar stakes his claim in Chisago County 4 years before the first historical permanent settlement of Swedes there, so Moberg, by his own reckoning, turned virgin literary soil in depicting the lives of ordinary Swedish Americans in Minnesota. In this respect, Moberg's fertile creative imagination took control over his otherwise strong sense of realism. While no critics have questioned the historical accuracy of the emigrant novels, it is clear that other writers, both Swedish and American, had preceded Moberg in recording Swedish settlement patterns in the United States. In fact, Moberg listed names of some of those researchers in his own bibliography for the novels. Still, Moberg's faithful depiction of the lives of humble people involved in a historic undertaking remains constant throughout the emigrant novels. This narrative consistency is one of the strengths of the series. Reading the emigrant novels as a psychohistory of Moberg and his America is perhaps equally as instructive as searching for historical motifs. Scholars have often asked how Moberg's personal impressions of America after 1948 influenced the directions his epic narrative takes. It is tempting to view the storyline as leading in a linear fashion from poverty and oppression in the Old World to affluence and freedom in the New World. A more complex set of psychological variables can be seen to enter the novels, however. In this connection, the Swedish novelist Sven Delblanc has pointed out how the dictates of realism led Moberg to conclude that the basic human condition is constant, regardless of time and country. Likewise, Professor Rochelle Wright considered how Moberg, in spite of his early infatuation with America, often portrayed the new land as a shadow kingdom, a land to which one's relatives disappeared, never to be heard from again. America was the great divider of families. Carl Oscar and Christina illustrate this theme. While Carl Oscar believes in their future in America with almost total optimism, Christina sees their emigration as the abandonment of age-old traditions and the loss of an ancient Swedish birthright. Moberg never allowed the reader to forget Christina's homesickness for her native Småland. Even Carl Oscar's material success is tainted. First, he never fully understands the emotional impact of his leaving his own aged parents in Sweden. By the same token, he is slow to grasp the irony of his statement to Christina that his children one day will thank him for taking them to America, when in fact, they grow up to marry into other ethnic groups and leave Carl Oscar behind, much as he had left his own parents. Furthermore, it is ironic that the period of Carl Oscar's rising prosperity on his Minnesota farm corresponds to the general time of Christina's death. It is after Christina's passing that Carl Oscar seals his fate by questioning God for the second time in his life. In addition, it bears mentioning that a recurring motif in Moberg's nonfiction writings was his admiration for the spirit of enterprise he saw in Americans. Yet he was equally as shocked by what he perceived as their callous individualism and lack of sympathy for the less fortunate in society. No character better embodies these traits than Carl Oscar, whose qualities of diligence and practicality are counterbalanced by his impatience with and lack of understanding for Robert, the incurable dreamer. Carl Oscar is also skeptical about Native Americans, because he considers them lazy. The emigrant novels should be seen, in short, in their full realistic light. They are stories of blighted hopes as much as of personal fulfillment. Of all Moberg's characters, only Ulrika and Jonas Petter gain a kind of lasting happiness. Most of the others, from Inga-Lina to Christina, succumb soon after their arrival here, or long before their time. In the end, Carl Oscar remains, old and lonely, residing in Minnesota in body only. Moberg saw at first hand the difficulty of ever totally adapting to a new culture. He remained forever Swedish, perhaps despite himself, and in his novels he dramatized the problems of adaptation. Still, more than any other Swedish writer, he succeeded in bridging the gap between the old and new worlds, between Sweden and Minnesota.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?